Nebraska got it done. 95-74. The win over Creighton, snapping a 7-game losing streak to its rival. Chris Hedy is here. I'm John Niatawa. Another edition of Half Court Press, a podcast where we talk about college basketball as it relates to the local teams that we cover. And obviously, this episode is going to be pretty heavily dedicated to Saturday's game.
The fallout.
The game.
Yeah.
The fallout.
This is the fallout episode.
Fallout episode of Half Court Press.
It's like, you know, the end of a video game when, like, you like, beat the big boss, and then there's like a black screen, and then, like, it comes back, and there's, like, smoke and debris everywhere, and there's, like, one of them is standing there, and, like, that's the winner, and now we have to talk about that.
Right.
Like, this is the fallout of what happened.
Man, the energy in the building was fantastic. It was one of the most, like, in my opinion, one of the most impactful environments, and you could tell that Nebraska's players fed off it. I guess, you know, and then afterward, I mean, the emotion that they showed having won the game. What stood out to you about the way that Nebraska accomplished it? Because, you know, they were favorites, and they had the pressure on them, on their shoulders, and they obviously desperately wanted to. Oh, I used that word, desperate.
Oh, you used it. The D word.
We got to get into that later.
Yikes.
They wanted to win. They wanted to end that streak.
Right.
So, I don't know. How were they able to sort of just kind of keep that, like, they were, I don't know, they were calm and collected, but yet on edge.
Yeah.
They had a good balance.
I was taken by the way that they started the game, because it was almost like, from the beginning, they were like, hey, we're here to party. Hey, we're going to shoot a lot of threes. We're going to make them. And, like, you're not going to be able to do anything. We're here to have a really good time at your expense, is basically the way that they approached the game. And this is the best they could play. Like, that is peak Nebraska this season. That's as good as they will probably ever play.
So, yeah, it was like, so Palmer hit that third three, and wasn't he just sort of like hopping? Or, I mean, he had the threes out, but he was like laughing as he's like looking at the bench. I thought he was.
I think it was that three.
I don't know. He has too many threes. I can't remember which one it was, but it was that one, I think, where he was just sort of like dancing and bobbing around.
Yeah.
And then, you know, 2 minutes later, you got a player diving on the floor for a loose ball.
Yeah.
So it was like this dichotomy between, like you said, let's go have a ball, let's party, but we're also going to just do everything we can to beat the heck out of you.
In an interesting way, you know, Nebraska lost 7 in a row, but they showed up certain they were going to win. Like, they were not going to lose that basketball game, even though Creighton had, you know, days to prepare, even though they had taken Gonzaga to the brink. Nebraska showed up, even though Nebraska came off a loss to Minnesota.
Yeah.
They showed up like, we're gonna win.
It's that one. You know what? That might have done them good to lose to Minnesota in the way they lost.
Oh,
like that might have like sort of reality check almost snapped them back into form.
Yeah. Well, you know this. I know this is hard for people, especially in a football state, to understand. Losses can be good. Sometimes your basketball team needs to lose.
I'm of the opinion, man, I swear that there are veteran coaches out there who sabotage their own team so they will lose.
They need to lose.
Earlier this year. There's one game, I swear, there was like 5 years ago, John Calipari got teed up and ejected within 4 minutes on the road. And I'm like, he's not trying to win this game. He wants his team to lose. Yeah. They got to learn a lesson somehow.
They're not listening to practice.
You know, like, it's okay to lose.
If you're not going to listen to me, I'm not even going to be here. That's right? What that was. Earlier this year, North Carolina is playing at Michigan, and Michigan is just kicking the crap out of them. And then, and it's like an important game. And, you know, North Carolina, you know, needs some work, obviously. And Roy Williams took his starters out and sat in for 10 minutes in the second half. 10 minutes in the second half! Basically saying, like, we're not going to win this game, and now I want you guys to watch how much we need you to actually play well.
It's the luxury of the long college basketball season where you can incur some hits and you can take some punches, but it's all about how you respond.
So,
because obviously, come February and March, you want to be in a position to be playing your best.
So the
way that Nebraska, I mean, a lot of credit to the coaching staff, but also the players. I mean, the veterans on that team really got the squad ready to go, because from the start of that game, they did not look like, from a body language and intensity, a sort of swagger standpoint, they did not look like the Nebraska teams over the last five, 6 years in this game.
No, and it was interesting because I think the team set the tone, and then the crowd followed. And we talked going into the game about how this was Creighton's first true road game, and it's a pretty young team. And were you surprised? Like, what I wrote for today was James Palmer goes out with, like, 12:47 left with two fouls. And then from there, for the next 7 minutes, Nebraska outscores Creighton 21-7, takes a 20-point lead. And Creighton starters were, like, in at that time. Like, they were still technically in the game, but with Palmer on the bench, Nebraska kind of sprung out to this big lead. Were you surprised with the way that Creighton didn't handle the moment?
Right,
because
right.
I think we can agree Nebraska absolutely handled the moment, but were you surprised that Creighton didn't?
No, I would say that they didn't. I think it's hard to argue that they did. Mm-hmm. I mean, I think they settled in toward the second half. They started playing harder.
Sure.
I think perhaps fueled a little bit by their ability to have some success offensively. I thought they were competing better.
Mm-hmm.
And obviously they got within striking distance a few times in the second half. But no, in that first half, man, I rewatched that game, and I don't think that Creighton's played a team this year that's played that hard.
Sure.
Probably not. I don't know. They may not play in a team again that's played that hard. And so I think that was a little bit of a shock.
Yeah.
I mean, that image of Connor Cashaw rolling the ball. He was stuck in a bind, and he rolls the ball out to Mitch Balick. And Mitch is a hustler, man. Like, mm-hmm. He's one of the hardest working guys on the team. For him to just, he was sitting there waiting for the ball to roll to him, and then all of a sudden, out of nowhere, here comes Nana Akinton, just like diving for it.
And to just quick preface, Nana Akinton does not dive for loose balls. Like, I think that's the first time
when he got on the floor.
When he went to the bench, you can watch it on TV. Michael Lewis, the Nebraska assistant, stops, and he was like, "That's what we want from you." Yeah. Like, that's, we've not seen that before.
Right. So that, like, just that image kind of sticks out in my head. It's mm-hmm. like, last week against Gonzaga, Mitch Balick gets that ball.
Sure.
The ball gets to him.
Yeah.
Any other game this year, like, that ball has gotten to him. And so for Creighton, that was a shock to the system. I think the crowd was more impactful and just alive in a way that those young guys hadn't experienced before. Now, Balick, Alexander, Crumple, Mintz played at Gonzaga last year, and I think that was a nice taste, but mm-hmm. that was a different level at Nebraska. That was an incredible environment. So that was part of it. And then the fact that Nebraska was hitting threes and Creighton couldn't keep up offensively. Psychologically, you're a team that is, your identity is based in your offense, and you're getting beat sort of at your own game.
Yeah, isn't that interesting?
So I think that Creighton's players, you could tell, because they kind of got a little one-on-one oriented at times, maybe taking the first shot available instead mm-hmm. of working to get a better shot. Rushing some things in transition. I had it marked down somewhere. In the first half, they got two buckets in transition in the first 4 minutes. Like, Alexander banged in a three. Crumple hit a, got a layup. Like, Roby got a hand on it, but he wasn't in position.
Yeah.
Or where he needed to be to keep that from that bucket from happening. But after that, Creighton got nothing.
Well,
and it was like Cashaw got blocked and Damian Jefferson got blocked in transition. Alexander missed a layup. Mintz missed a layup. There's a turnover. So it was like, I think all of that sort of, in my mind, kind of built on itself.
Sure.
And Creighton, for whatever, you know, just those in their first road game, weren't able to sort of turn the tide fast enough.
It was interesting because I think part of that is because Nebraska is such a good defensive team. But the other part of that, I think, is, you know, they actually had some open looks. Like, there were quite a few.
Well, yeah, there were.
Like,
I mean,
Damian Jefferson was wide open in the corner, and it was almost like they couldn't believe they were open. It was almost like they were like, okay, I'm open, and I'm not going to be very, like, open for one very long or very often, so I have to shoot this shot. You know? Like, it was, and so I think that rushed a little bit, and it was.
Yeah, and I mean, Alexander had a wide open three in transition that he missed.
Yeah, that's what
so
I mean.
So, like, those things, like, yeah, but again, I just go back to sort of the way that Nebraska played and how much it hustled. So, like, the Creighton missed four. I just named them all four. Those four layups and then that three by Alexander. That's five buckets in transition that I feel like on any other day, those are buckets.
Yeah.
But the way, like, against any other team.
Mm-hmm.
But the way that Nebraska, maybe four out of five. Okay, four out of five are buckets. So we're talking about, like, 8 to 13 points or something like that. Yeah. I couldn't do math in my head. Creighton, 11 points maybe. That on an, in a normal game where Creighton, the efficiency level that it operates in transition, you would get those. Sure. But the way that Nebraska hustled to get back, to bother those shots, to block a couple, and then the pressure that Nebraska was putting on them by scoring consistently and the crowd. I don't think Creighton handled it as well as it wanted to, as well as it talked about needing to handle it. And it's funny, it's because Coach McDermott said after the game, it's like, we're sitting there in timeout saying, we don't need an 18-point play here. Like, it's fine. We're okay. We can just work our way back into it. But then when they went out on the court, it was like, where's that 18-point play? Right. Who's got that shot? Like, you got it. Here you go, man.
Yeah, that's a good point.
The message didn't click until, I don't know, Mitch Ballack started hitting threes.
Then kind of went into Steph Curry mode there for a little bit.
Right. When that happened, then it's like, oh, okay, well, I guess I can settle it. But
we're getting a little X's and O's, and so I wanted to ask you this, because we kind of talked about it after the game, and I've written about it, is I was pretty shocked with the way that Creighton defended Nebraska, and that they were basically like, we're going to let you guys shoot. And I don't care how many threes you make, James Palmer, but we're not going to deny you on the wing. We're going to stay a couple feet off of you because you're going to drive, and I'm worried about that. And Nebraska just totally took advantage of it. Now, you can't always game plan and be like, we're going to have to be up on them because they're going to shoot 51% from three. Like that, you obviously can't. But what did you think of the way that Creighton defended Nebraska? Because it obviously kind of backfired, and it kind of
it did not work.
Yeah.
It didn't work. But no, I mean, I can't be too, well, I got a couple thoughts. The first thought I'll say is that this general plan of pack it in and force Nebraska to be a jump shooting team has worked 7 years in a row.
Sure.
Or whatever, you know, like, it's not the exact plan, but for the most part, that's what they've done against the Huskers. And like last year, I think of that game, Nebraska started the game 5 of 8 from three here in Creighton, in Omaha against Creighton, 5 of 8 from three. And then finish 4 of 18 from three. So in Creighton's mind, I can see why, all right, you didn't want to let Palmer get loose the way you did, but it's okay. We don't need to drastically throw away everything.
Cool off.
Because it's Nebraska. They're shooting 33% from the floor or from three on the year. Mm-hmm. Actually, you know what? It's a good thing if they keep taking jumpers, because that's our best. We don't want them driving on us, drawing fouls, and giving up layups. Maybe that's a good thing. They didn't stop hitting. But I will say, too, some of those shots were impressive. Watson hit a pull-up three with a hand in his face. Allen hit a pull-up three with a hand in his face. Nana Kenton got a catch-and-shoot three. Now, the defender was playing off of him, but he was also, like, three steps behind the line. And you're like, there's no way he's firing this up.
Right.
And honestly, he probably wouldn't have fired it up if they weren't up, like, 12 or whatever.
Yeah.
But he still shot it, got it off in rhythm, and made it. So there are a few, like they hit 8 in the first half. So I said like 4 of them in my mind, I'm like, as I'm watching it, rewatching the game, if I'm Creighton, I'm just kind of like, I don't know.
Yeah.
You guys made those.
Right.
Good job. But, but I do think that the idea of Creighton, they're playing small. That was their determination. They've made this determination several weeks ago that that's their best offensive lineup. So they stuck with it in this game, but that there are flaws to that lineup. And because they were small, they had to put more attention. They did the same thing against Gonzaga, too. Place more attention on plugging those driving lanes and helping one another in the paint. And when you're thinking, all right, where am I at from a help standpoint and how I'm going to make sure that I plug this driving lane, you're not – maybe there's that split second in your mind where you're it keeps you frozen. And you're not able to close out as fast.
Absolutely. That there were many times when Tyshawn Alexander was, I mean, when he was guarding James Palmer, and you want to see man and ball, but he is basically has most of his back turned, looking at the ball screen, thinking, I need to watch
like,
Tom. I need to watch Glenn Watson.
Yeah, because I got to take a step in to take away this drive.
And James Palmer just kind of floats down a little bit, gets away a little bit, and gets a little bit more space. The reason why I was so shocked by it, I guess, is because of the way that Nebraska took advantage of it. But from a, like, you know, hyper-local, like, me as a beat reporter covering this team aspect, what it said to me was, like, man, this is going to be a hard team to scout. Like, scouting Nebraska is going to be hard because Creighton took a week, and that's what they came up with. And then Nebraska was like, you're completely wrong. Yeah.
Well, I will say, again, because Creighton is playing small, they're sort of limited.
Sure.
So, like they were really worried about one-on-one drive, like that matchup. Mm-hmm. But, like, a team like Minnesota, you know, they had Amir Coffey who could – they were comfortable with him going one-on-one with Palmer.
Yeah.
Or defending him in a one-on-one setting. Sure, Palmer might get a few on him, but overall, okay.
He had 11, but he shot 3 of 14.
Yeah, like, but Creighton was not going to be like, oh, just put one guy on Palmer and mm-hmm. that's fine. Mm-hmm. I mean, if they had Khyree Thomas, they would. They got to do that the last 2 years, but they couldn't do that. And so, I don't know. You're right, though, that in that if Nebraska's going to shoot the way it shot, certainly they become a nightmare to defend.
Even if they shoot that way one out of every five games. Because then it's just one of every five games you shoot more, like over 50%, then it becomes like, well, crap, we've threw out our game plan. Because, like, what are we going to do?
Honestly, I really do think that the X factor was Thomas Allen. Mm-hmm. And that's, like, obvious. He scored a career high 18 points. But his aggressiveness, like, we're talking about closeouts. His first three buckets, I think it was his first three, all came
in the lane.
Yeah, but he attacked closeouts. Mm-hmm. Like,
yep.
Somebody was coming up to defend him because they had been previously sucked in. The ball got kicked out to him or passed to him to Allen, and a defender's coming up to try to, play on the ball defense, and he drove right by him. Mm-hmm. And you can say, oh, it was a poor closeout by Creighton's defender, or you can say, give credit to Allen for recognizing that and attacking it. And me, I tend to do that because I thought, sure, there's things that Creighton could have done better. But, I mean, kudos to Allen for stepping up in that moment because he hasn't done it very much.
Not since the KU game last year.
Right. So he stepped up, recognized that he was going to have some advantage moments. When someone's closing out on you as a ball handler, as a dribbler, I got to feel like you should feel like you have the advantage there. Mm-hmm. And so he was able to create some plays and I thought sort of inspire his guys. Because, like, Palmer was huge. That was sort of like tone setter number one. Mm-hmm. Tone setter number two was like Thomas Allen's aggressiveness. And it's like, oh, okay, so Thomas is here.
Right.
Then I'm here too.
When you're Nebraska and you don't have to lean on Glenn Watson being your second guy, man, that frees up mm-hmm. everything because it takes less pressure off. Like, Isaac Copeland really didn't have that good of a game. Like, he had a, like, I think he had 5 points in the first, like, 25 minutes. I remember turning to Dirk and being like, man, where's Isaac? But, like, they didn't even need him. And so, like, that's the one, Thomas Allen's been the one guy where it's been, like, the core four and Thomas. Like he's kind of just in a sidecar next to everybody. And he kind of had a, you know, it was really cool to see, and it was really interesting because, like, I don't think we came into that game but thinking, like, Thomas Allen, you gotta watch out for that guy.
No,
like,
and I there were a number of moments, and especially early, where it just seemed like Nebraska was collectively ready, mm-hmm. and you know, whatever happened on Thursday and Friday last week and Saturday morning, I guess, to kind of get them in the right mentality. Do that again.
Right.
Because that worked really well. Those guys were locked in.
Let's talk rivalry and, like, what this game meant to the bigger picture, because I feel like this is a game we're going to reference for a while.
Well, and the
for a lot of different
reasons.
And
it's funny because it was a 19-point game. It was in double digits for the most, for about, like, 30 seconds in the second half.
Yeah.
So you would think leaving, you know, oh, a 19-point game, not much to talk about. Well, there's a lot.
Yeah.
There was a lot. Well, I do think that one of the reasons why the rivalry, like, in my mind, it feels like it's sort of sparked back up.
Mm-hmm.
Not that it was ever dormant or anything, mm-hmm. but there was, I don't know, when one team wins seven in a row, it's sort of like, it's kind of like what we talked in the last podcast when we were joking about different sort of trash talk insult things that mm-hmm. fans could hurl back at each other. But it's like scoreboard sort of ends it.
Right.
If I'm a Nebraska fan trying to talk trash to Creighton, and they're just like, seven in a row, man. Like, we beat you.
It's like Iowa, Nebraska, where, like, Nebraska fans can be like, well, we've won these national titles. And I was like, we've beaten you by 100, like, every time we've played you. And then this year, it kind of sparked again because there's, like, you know, it was a good game. With this one, it was a good game because I think the line that Dirk uses was really good. It was like, the whipping boy, 10 miles, finally found a bat. Mm. Like, he finally punched back.
Yeah.
And, like, Nebraska finally was like, we're not only equal to you, but we're better than you.
like they can make that argument now.
Right.
And they have the scoreboard to back it up. And even though, sure, Creighton won 7 in a row before, what matters is right now, and Nebraska won on Saturday. And so that has like added a whole new element. And plus you have a bunch of really prideful Creighton players who like did not enjoy that.
Right.
Okay, so they had to walk off. I watched them all walk off the court while Nebraska's guys are dancing, and you got the crowd that's still there. Well, not everybody, but most of the fans are still there on their feet, cheering, enjoying, like celebrating. And Creighton's guys are walking to the locker room, and they had to sit in. As I wrote about it in the paper, like they were sitting on the bench. All their top players were sitting on the bench after they subbed out, subbed in their reserves in the final 2 minutes, and they have this like sort of soak in the agony of defeat.
Yeah.
While, you know, the fans are chanting "Go Big Red," and they get to do a send off for all the starters. Nebraska subbed all those guys out, and they got a standing ovation. So, like, they really, it wasn't like a sudden, oh my gosh, we just lost. Like, they spent,
you had to just sit in
for
it.
Like 10 right. minutes or so. They were just sort of like, ugh.
They're like potatoes boiling in a pot.
So you
of
know
soup.
That they're going
like
to be.
They just had to sit there. And
it,
like,
right. It wasn't just, it wasn't just Creighton players. It's Creighton fans and Coach McDermott. So, like, I think next year, 2 years from now, like, it you never like to lose. You don't like to lose to a rival. And so I think that, and you could tell how much Creighton players, like, how much it meant to them. They're on the court trash talking fans, I feel like.
Yeah.
And,
Mitch Balick is looking to the. I think he looked at James Palmer every time James Palmer's on the bench and Mitch Balick hit a three. It was almost kind of like a kid being like, "Hey, come out! Like, what are you doing on the bench? Like, get off!" Let's
was
play.
He looking at Palmer? I know that Balick shot one. His first one he hit in the corner.
Yeah, and he turned around and he looked.
Yeah, but I saw the bench sort of like yell. You know, like benches do.
Sure.
When they try to like
shot
distract you. Yell shot or whatever, miss or.
So the Nebraska bench.
Yeah. You could tell one. I think one guy like leaned forward almost. Mm-hmm. To like really yell, and I think it was Balick. It may not. Maybe it wasn't.
No, I know exactly what you're talking about, because I remember that was the first time I realized.
But then,
like,
but then he turned and said. But I also think he might have been talking to the fans as well.
Yeah, he might have been.
It looked like. I mean, it's hard to tell based on the TV screen, and we're sitting up high, so it's hard to tell like where his head's at. It, and I didn't ask him afterward, but regardless, he was talking.
Oh yeah,
and those guys were. And then after they made that run to cut it to 10 with like 6 minutes left. They were on the court sort of like flexing and yelling, trying to kind of, I mean, it's a hostile environment. They're trying to sort of get themselves going and get some energy. But you could also tell, like, they weren't happy about what was going on.
Right.
And they were showing some passion for
it. Sure.
So I think that is another thing that...
And Mitch Balick is a sophomore. Like, he's not going around. And he's not leaving anytime soon. And that's what's so great about it.
But that happened. But before all of that was the Tim Miles.
Yeah, I was going to say, let's talk Miles and McDermott. Because this is why people listened to this podcast today. Which is why I'm glad that we talked about something else. Because this was a lot more than just, like, two guys in a feud, you know?
Yeah, I mean... Well, the one thing about college basketball is that the coaches... hang around for longer than the players. So and inevitably, like, they're the stars of the sport. So as much as they may not want to be the subject of conversation, a lot of times they are. And even though we don't know the full details of what was said, I think we have a pretty good idea based on what Dirk wrote and kind of what we've gleaned from watching replays and the TV and stuff. But like, we don't know exactly what was said when Tim Miles and Greg McDermott got teed up a double technical, but we could tell that they both were passionate.
Right.
And,
the fact that it even happened.
Yes.
Like, I've never in my life seen two coaches yell at, like, trash talk each other to the point that it was caught on screen, and like both get double technical, and the ref is like, "You guys need to not talk to each other." Like, that is extraordinary. Like, I have not seen that before. Like, I've seen coaches look at each other.
Right.
But like. That was something else.
Yeah, and it's hard to say, because like when the TV screen cut to Miles, he wasn't really like...
He had his arms out.
You couldn't really see much what he was saying or anything. Mm-hmm. Dirk wrote that Miles told Greg McDermott to shut up. But then when they cut clips of Greg McDermott, you could read his lips. Like,
yeah.
I saw him say, like, go coach your own team.
Yeah.
And I think there might have been some BSs in there.
There were.
that you could see on the screen.
Yeah.
And so Yeah, they were going back at it, or back and forth with each other, and the refs were like, no, right, we're not going to do that. But you're right, it hasn't happened in this setting, and I do think that, you know, it's somewhat significant because, as Dirk wrote, you know, Tim Miles has always been sort of on, he's been on the wrong end of this,
yeah,
and a lot of times has been on the wrong end disastrously, and so this was sort of his first sort of moment where he could convincingly say, like, we're on an even playing field today.
Yeah, yeah.
And so I wonder how much of that from Tim was sort of deliberate to just say, like, look, man, you've beat me 14 times, but today I'm not backing down. Like, yeah.
We're not at brunch today. We're not on the golf course anymore.
Right.
Like, basketball coaches are really fascinating because, like, they will purposefully get a technical. Like, they will, because then they can talk to their team and be like Tim Miles did earlier this year, where against Texas Tech, where he had a technical and he brought the team in and he was like, I'm going to fight. Are you guys going to fight? Like, they're big on metaphors and all that fun stuff. So part of me wonders if it was a message, if it was like thought of like, I know that he does this, so I'm going to do this at some point.
Yeah, because the argument was, from what we understand, was about coaching out of the coaching
box.
Which
is like the most petty, like, does not matter whatsoever. Mm-hmm. But
it's the type of thing that if you can get the refs,
right?
Like, if you're Tim Miles and you're kind of like, hey, look, he's out of the coaching box.
Yeah.
I mean, that would probably irritate the guy who's out of the coaching box.
Absolutely.
Like, wait, who told on me?
Who are you?
He
did? Like, what? Seriously?
Yeah. So, yeah. But then it escalated.
Right.
It could have been left at that.
Right.
Quick handshake,
too.
Yeah, very quick handshake.
Quick handshake.
So, but that's what adds to this. I mean, you know, if you're a Creighton, hardcore Creighton fan, and you're a hardcore Nebraska fan, like, you don't want your coaches being friends, right? Like, this is a rivalry.
Right.
You,
no,
you kind of you want
exactly
to see
right.
the competitive nature because you know that it means something to them.
Right.
Even though you should know that already, they're getting paid to do this. Like,
right.
if they don't win these types of games,
right.
they're not going to have their job. But
right.
you still like to see that visibly when you're at the game. So, yeah, that was. But the thing, Greg McDermott, he's actually a lot of fun to watch on the sideline. He interacts with coaches a lot.
Mm-hmm.
I think about the Big East tournament. There was a game, Jacob Epperson, they were playing Providence, and Jacob Epperson hit a three, and he had hit like three threes on the year. So this was like, you know, he's a freshman who had just got pulled out of his red shirt, and they were playing Providence team that hadn't seen him yet.
Mm-hmm.
Like, the two games they played against Providence were before he had been pulled from his red shirt. So he comes in and nails a three from the top of the key. And, like, Ed Cooley, Providence coach, sort of looks at Greg McDermott like, what the heck? And Greg's mm-hmm. like, I don't know, man. Like, that was weird. And they just sort of
right.
kind of little back and forth. Now, Greg and Ed are, like, really good friends. And they kind of have that sort of playful back and forth, throwing mm-hmm. out digs and type of stuff, even in a public setting. But even, I think Greg and Chris Holtman shared a couple moments when they played Ohio State earlier this year. So, like, I've definitely seen interaction, but it's usually kind of like
lighthearted, fun,
mm-hmm.
like, oh, that was weird, huh? Okay, I'm going to keep coaching my team.
Yeah.
Instead of being like, hey, I'm coming after you today.
Right, there was definitely
yeah.
like finger pointing.
There was a couple finger pointing.
Veins popping
yeah.
out, like yelling
yeah.
was going on.
But
yeah, so that happened. which obviously adds, I mean, another layer of intrigue, not just immediately following the game, but then afterward, too,
mm-hmm.
As we go forward with this thing. But also, Greg McDermott's comments after the game.
Right.
Where he said a lot of things. I do think that he gave Nebraska credit.
He did, immediately.
But he also said that Nebraska was desperate.
Mm-hmm.
And some Nebraska fans have taken that to mean that their win has been devalued because
they were. It was like delivered.
It was
die.
A life, or, yeah,
yeah,
life or
life
death
or death
game.
Yeah,
is that how you took it, or how did you
yeah.
sort of like? I don't know. I don't want to dig too deep in this because it's hard to judge
yeah.
sort of the intent of words
mm-hmm.
and in the heat of the moment after a game like. Greg McDermott clearly wasn't happy. He doesn't like to lose anyway,
right.
and then to lose to Nebraska for the first time, that is something that is not a scenario that he would want to be in. But you know, he did say it. So I wonder, like, how... I mean, do you think Nebraska fans are right for thinking that that was sort of like a... I don't know, a dig.
Yeah, I don't know. I don't think that it was a purposeful, like, this is my opportunity to clap back, or this is my opportunity to devalue that win.
Yeah.
But I do think that it comes from, and this is me, like, straight speculating, but from the way that he talked and the way that he kind of approached that post-game press conference, it did, in my opinion, come from a sense of, like, they needed that game a whole lot more than we did, and it's okay. Like, not that it's quote-unquote okay that we lost, but it's like, this will be okay. Like they were desperate. They absolutely needed a win.
Almost like...
We were here. We were just here. Like, they would have beaten everybody by 25.
Are you saying,
25.
Like, it's almost like he was saying, we won 7 in a row? Like,
yeah.
Six,
well, I mean,
we're 7-1 against you now? Like,
the way that I perceived it
7-1 still pretty good?
Yeah, the way I kind of perceived it was just like, just because they won tonight doesn't mean that they were a better program than we are.
Mm.
That's the way that I... And that was compounded when he called Glenn Watson. It was a compliment, but he called him, like, a tough little cookie. And the way I described it in the newsroom, it was a compliment, but it kind of felt like when the Grinch gives Cindy Lou Who like a cup of milk and like taps her on the head and like pushes her to bed, where it's kind of like, well, that you're a cute little guy and like you did a great job, like you deserve to go to bed now, like that. It was just kind of like, so I think just the energy in there and the way that he said it, I don't think he was purposely being like, you know, I'm going to dig at this Nebraska program, but it did come off. And like, you can understand, these are coaches. They're proud of their programs. Like, Creighton's still a good basketball team. And yeah. I bet you in Greg's mind probably thinks like, if we played them 10 more times, we'd probably win a handful of them. But Nebraska, because of the situation, they played with some urgency or desperation. And the other thing is that like, he wasn't wrong at all.
Yeah. I can get behind you if you're sort of like, but it, part of me feels like it's almost like we're digging in the weeds here to try to like really come up with a narrative when you know, there were a lot of compliments that he dished out,
definitely,
and to me, playing desperate is not a bad thing.
Yeah, it's not.
So yeah, I think we could probably go back and forth on that, but you're right, like Nebraska did play desperate, like
absolutely.
Like your statement about Coach McDermott not being wrong about it, them playing desperate, like they won all the 50-50 balls. Well,
6 of 8, right?
I charted 6 of 8, but they were 6 for 6 until like six
right.
minutes left in the game
right.
or whatever. So
right.
they won all the when it mattered, they won all the 50-50 balls.
Yeah,
they killed Creighton on the offensive glass by extended possessions and creating second chance opportunities.
And the thing was, we don't want to minimize the fact of like Nebraska came in coming off a Minnesota loss. And because the way of Nebraska fans approach losses, it was a huge deal. It was Fire Miles. It was Bill Moose. Get Ernie Kent in here. Like, it was...
Ernie Kent.
He's hired Ernie Kent twice.
I understand,
yeah,
but...
Yeah. But it was like, what's Fred Hoiberg up to? Ty Lue, do you guys want to come out of retirement? Like, it was like, the world was on fire.
Yeah.
And so, like, that's probably... I can confidently say that's not why Nebraska played desperate. Like, it wasn't we got to save our coach's job, blah, blah, blah. It was, like, there was a lot of factors that went into it. But the fact of the matter is that, like, McDermott was not wrong in the idea that he was purveying, which is Nebraska came out wanting this game more than we did.
Yeah.
That's the crux of it.
Maybe he could have said it in a different way.
Sure.
That and maybe it would have been, well, I'm sure it would have been perceived differently, but maybe not. Maybe Husker fans really just wanted him to say Nebraska was better today.
Yeah.
That's probably what they wanted, and they didn't get that. But like, I mean, man, if my team plays desperate, like Nebraska played desperate, quote unquote desperate, I would be happy. Like, that is, because desperation in college basketball usually means that you're playing tougher, you're playing harder, you're playing with a little bit more focus, you're playing hungrier. Like, those usually are good qualities in this sport.
Yeah.
So
think about the NCAA tournament. You think they're not playing desperate in the Final Four?
Yeah.
It's all desperation.
Yeah, yeah.
That's the only thing they're playing with. They're just totally desperate for a national title. Like, that's all it is. And so it's a compliment and it's a dig, which is perfect because
for the rivalry.
It's perfect because
it doesn't matter whatever side you're on. You're just like, well, nah, he didn't mean anything by it, or actually, yeah, he did. Yeah. And so then just feels it. There were so many moments in that game where you can, I feel like, depending on what color you're wearing, sort of like build your own case for
choose
why.
Choose your own narrative. Yeah. Yeah, it's just choose your own narrative,
right.
Which is perfect for a rivalry.
No doubt.
Perfect for radio.
So speaking of Nebraska playing hard, I won't use the word desperate. I'll just say they played hard.
Beginning.
I did on. Fine, okay. Fine. I did. But they played hard.
Yeah.
Can they play hard again? Like that? Maybe. Yeah. I don't know. Why not? Why can't they play hard like that again?
They won't every single game because they just won't. That I kind of said it at the beginning, but like that was as good as they could possibly play. And that's the new. That game is the new precedent. And what's going to happen is, Nebraska's going to lose to Iowa, or they're going to lose to Ohio State, or they're going to lose to somebody, and the new stick that people are going to hit the program with is like, but what about Creighton? Like, why didn't you play like you did with Creighton? Like, why didn't you hit 14 threes? Why aren't you diving for loose balls? Like, why is the program gone into disarray because we're not playing like we did against Creighton anymore? And so that's one thing. Like, that's a thing that's going to happen the next time they lose. Now there are certain fuel that game had, because Pinnacle Bank Arena isn't always like that. Mm-hmm. I mean, it is some of the time, but like it was standing room only. There were great signs. Like it was just an unbelievable environment.
Yeah. I mean, the students got on,
they brought it, man.
They had the checks.
Mm-hmm.
There were a couple guys dressed up like FBI agents.
Yeah.
They chanted Greg's a cheater a couple times, and then obviously just brought energy.
Right.
So they had targeted sort of rivalry based chants and costumes.
Sure.
Like that's what you would expect for really any rivalry in college basketball, given the news that we learned over the last 2 months with Creighton being implicated in the college basketball scandal. But
can you take that?
But also, yeah, in addition to that, they were also just like really alive and electric and engaged in the game.
And so what it reminds me of a little bit is like,
it's like that's not all they did. They did.
Right. Yeah.
They helped contribute to make PBA, just a fantastic.
Yeah.
That was one of the best college basketball atmospheres I've ever been in.
Mm-hmm, me too.
And a lot of people associated with Nebraska, like, we're bringing up No Sit Sunday.
Well, I was about to bring that up because, like, you cannot tell me that Nebraska didn't play desperate against Wisconsin at No Sit Sunday. So what it tells me is that there's going to be a game that they're going to have to do this again. Like, they play Michigan and Michigan State back-to-back at the end of the year this year, right before the Big Ten tournament. And Nebraska right now is projected to be about 20-11. There's a possibility they drop a game or two that they shouldn't, and they're going to be kind of on the bubble. Maybe they absolutely need to win a game or two in the Big Ten. This is a stick that the people can hit the program with, but this is also fuel that the coaching staff can use of like, hey, remember what we did for Creighton? We have to play that well again, and we can. We know you can because you already did. And like, so this is like, it's almost like a. It sounds weird, but it's almost kind of like a superpower where it's like you don't use it all the time, but you're going to have to play like this again. I mean, the Big Ten is extremely good. The Big Ten is, I mean, they're going to play Michigan and Michigan State and Ohio State and Iowa. All those teams are ranked. Wisconsin's ranked. Like, you're going to have to bring it and play something somewhat like the way they did against Creighton. So, like, can they do it every game? No. There will be games when they play lazy and they just kind of look grinded out because that's what happens in basketball seasons. But what it told me was just the way that they played and the way that they shot and the way they were diving for loose balls and getting 50-50 balls and the energy that the team itself, like, it was interesting that I don't think the crowd was the reason why they played that hard. You know, like, they were going to play that hard if there were six people in the gym.
Mm-hmm.
And that's the way that you have to be, because you can't just only feed off the crowd. And so if they can bring that type of energy on the road somewhere or to Columbus, Ohio in March for the first round of the NCAA tournament, or Tulsa or Jacksonville or Des Moines or wherever, then that's a really good sign.
Yeah.
And I don't know if a Nebraska team has really had that moving forward. Since you asked me a question, I'll ask you a quick question.
Yeah, go ahead.
We talked about losses. Sometimes they're good. Sometimes they're not so good. How does Creighton rebuild after this loss? Is this a good loss that they needed? Like, how do they go forward?
Well, I have two things. I think the idea of how, like you're saying, so this sets a standard for Nebraska of mm-hmm. like, this is how hard we can play.
Yeah.
And if we do this again, and if we actually repeat it a lot, then we're going to be really good.
Mm-hmm.
Creighton's standpoint, they can look at Nebraska and say, that's how hard we need to play.
Mm-hmm.
And so they saw it firsthand. They obviously saw those guys diving for loose balls and battling on the block for boards. And obviously the game came down to more than just effort and hustle. But to me, it defined a lot about why the score was so lopsided mm-hmm. in the first half. And I think that, to me, that was one of the big takeaways for Creighton. Is just like they weren't playing terrible, but they weren't at the level that they had to be to match Nebraska that day.
Mm-hmm.
They had to bring their A game. And they didn't. And so they lost by 19. So when they're in a scenario again like that where they're playing another good team, even at home, but especially on the road, well, they know now.
Yeah.
Like, okay, this is we better expect that this team's going to play the way Nebraska did
mm-hmm.
because they're at home and maybe they feel like they need to win. They
right.
certainly want to protect their home court. Like, we've seen now what it takes.
Yeah.
And so they're going to try to replicate that. And then the other thing is just defensively. I mean, they got to figure out if they're going to learn, or like this loss will turn into a good thing.
Mm-hmm.
The Gonzaga loss will turn into a good thing. It's because they learned their lessons defensively.
Sure.
And to me, a lot of it's going to come down to the details. Now we'll see if these last two games, I mean, shoot, Gonzaga was like at 1.35 points per possession. Nebraska
yeah.
was like at 1.38 or something. I mean, they were really high.
They kind of ran into two buzzsaws.
They did. Creighton wasn't able to sort of affect the game to offer some resistance to kind of throw those two teams off their rhythm, to break the rhythm. So I don't know if this means that Creighton's going to reassess a little bit of like, you know, they go small because it really benefits their offense, but maybe they have to incorporate some personnel changes to go bigger at times to help them on the defensive glass, to help them protect the rim a little bit better. So in that way they aren't helping as much inside and they can
mm-hmm.
Stick to shooters a little bit more on the perimeter. I don't know if that's going to happen or not. We'll see. But certainly it further emphasizes the importance on the details for Creighton. You know, how good are your closeouts? How good are your box outs? Are you locked into the scouting report? I mean, you know, the first three that Palmer hit, sure, it was a semi-tough shot, but he makes, I mean, I've watched enough of Palmer to know that if he puts the ball on the floor and he's taking a rhythm dribble and going up with a shot, like, he feels good about that shot.
Mm-hmm.
I think he's a better dribble into the shot shooter than a catch and shoot guy.
I think I agree with that. Yeah.
He's one of those guys that just like, I mean, he gets into flow.
It's almost like his shot comes from the dribble, you know?
Yeah.
Just like that's how it all begins.
Some guys are like that. I mm-hmm. felt like Marcus Foster was like that. I think he was a better dribble into his shot type of guy than a catch and shoot shooter. So he got that first one. And the second three that he got, I don't know if it's miscommunication or something. His defender got screened and nobody was there, whether the defender had to fight over the screen or whether somebody else had to be out there to help. He was wide open,
mm-hmm.
and that was an assignment breakdown. So it's like the little details in the second half of that game. I feel like Creighton didn't rotate well at times on drivers. I mean, they were scrambling a little bit because they were double teaming, and there were times when they'd given up an offensive rebound, and so there were guys wide open. But I don't know. Tiny fouling shooters. Palmer got fouled. They might have been weak calls, but they're fouls.
They're still fouls, yeah.
Especially on the road, you can't expect to get any calls, really.
Mm-hmm.
You have to go in thinking that you're not going to catch a break. So fouling shooters, rotating on defense, closing out, boxing out, you know, like all these little details have to be executed at a higher level for Creighton to be successful defensively, because they don't have Khyree Thomas. They don't have the lockdown defenders. They don't have the length that they did last year. especially when they're in operating out of their small lineup. So I think that that, to me, is the more like glaring long-term takeaway from Nebraska and Gonzaga. And if Creighton is going to indeed sort of learn from it, I think that's where the lessons start.
Sure.
You know, maybe this is a team that, because there were stretches against Gonzaga, there was a six-minute stretch where they didn't score. They were outscored 16-3. It was just the offense hit a little bit of a lull, and that's ultimately why they lost. And against Nebraska, offensively, they just couldn't find a rhythm for 10 minutes. And shoot, maybe they do figure it all out, and then they don't have those droughts, they're not even really droughts, but I think it was like, I don't know, it was like 10 points over 8 minutes or something against Nebraska, or maybe 10 minutes or something like that against Nebraska.
There was at least the one that I wrote about, it was 14 over 7 minutes.
Okay.
Because that was when Palmer's on the bench.
Right.
It was like 12 something to 503 or something like that.
So, I mean.
But like, other than that, like.
I was just going to say that. Well, maybe there's a scenario where they just start scoring the heck out of the ball and then they just outscore people. And in the Big East, which is young, and maybe the teams aren't as physically developed as they have been in the past. So maybe you can get away with that. I don't know. But I think that, I mean, I would say let's start with the defense, and because you don't want to be giving up. The things that you gave up the last two games.
Yeah, and the thing is like, though Nebraska won by 19, there were definitely moments, especially in the second half, when it got cut to like 9, and it kind of hung around 9 to 11 for a while, that you kind of looked around and you were like, man, if Creighton won, Creighton could do this. Like, I kept thinking, Mitch Ballack is Steph Curry mode over here, and Nebraska's missing a couple shots, and Nebraska generally has like one or two droughts of like 4 minutes. And so I just kept thinking, if they just don't hit a couple shots, and Mitch Ballack hits a couple, and it's a 4-point game. This is brand new ball game, baby.
Yeah.
And so, I think you might be right that there's also, you know, a slim part of it where it's kind of like, for Creighton, you could take away and just say, okay, we ran into a team that really wanted that one, and they shot really well, and we had, you know, 8 minutes that we just were not good. Other than that, we were fine. So like, maybe that's not the end of the world, you know? Like, mm-hmm. Maybe we don't have to like rehaul everything.
Yeah.
Or it's like, we've got some issues that are going to pop up.
Give up 94 points in Nebraska. It's like, oh my gosh, what are we going to do?
Right.
We have to change everything.
Yeah.
Yeah, there was, like, I was of the mind that game, and especially looking back on it, it's easy to say that it was over at halftime.
Mm-hmm.
But you're right, like, Creighton had a couple moments in there, and I think this is where the Blue Jays are going to draw encouragement from. It's just like, you know, they cut it to 10 multiple times. I think they had a possession with the ball down 10, and they threw a lob to Jacob Epperson. And he just, like, I don't know, dropped the ball easily.
Literally.
Yeah, like.
Figuratively.
I feel like that's a 95%, maybe even higher conversion rate. Mm-hmm. He was unguarded. He just needed to catch a lob and dunk it. Missed it, and then, I think Nebraska grabbed the rebound, and Glenn Watson hit a three.
Yeah,
and it was back up to 13. There were a lot of sort of moments where I think Martin Crumple caught a rebound and Creighton was going to start the break and he just threw it away.
Mm-hmm.
Credit Glenn Watson for getting the steal. He's in good position. He read his eyes, but it's a play that you, as for Creighton, you're trying to come back. You can't have those mistakes.
Right.
And obviously all the offensive rebounds that Nebraska had. I think it was Nebraska started the second half 9 of 15 from the floor.
Wow.
And of those six misses, it got three of the offensive boards.
Really?
Yeah.
Wow.
So that is mighty tough. It's one of the reasons why Creighton, as well as it started in the second half, was still down 13. The under 12 timeout, I think.
Yeah.
It's like all this had happened, and you look at Creighton, you're like, man, they're executing. Look at him, out of bounds plays. They're getting Mitch Ballack looks. Like, he's on fire, and everything seems to be working. Davion Mitz making tough drives, those finishes. Wow. It's still 13.
It's still 13.
No,
so I think halftime was
47-34.
47-34. At one point, it was 44. And so I remember looking up and being like, it's basically the exact, like, it's like the exact same thing is just happening. It's just like, they're just kind of keeping them just kind of right.
That's why
here.
It's if they could have in a, like, my own, like, not unbiased fantasy world, like, reset the score at zero, like, the second half was really good.
Yeah, no, great.
But in
yeah.
the context of it being Nebraska ahead by 10, it wasn't as entertaining, I don't think. But if you could just sort of watch that second half unfold without that, like, mm-hmm. you had Creighton going on, like, a 5-0 spurt, and then Nebraska answering with, like, a 7-0 spurt, and then Creighton coming back with a 7-0 spurt, and then Nebraska going 5-0. You know, they were trading buckets. Like, both teams were executing at a high clip offensively. It was fun.
If that was the start to the game, oh, that'd be great.
We got it for like 4 minutes, and then Nebraska just went.
Yeah.
Well, Palmer went a little beast mode, and the whole team just followed his lead.
Yeah.
All right. Well,
I think we got everything. I think
we covered it all. I think
we have squeezed this orange completely dry.
Nebraska plays Oklahoma State this weekend. Creighton is going to play Green Bay. Both teams sort of have some days to just let it sit and to recharge and recover if you're Creighton, and Nebraska to sort of exhale.
Yeah.
And then get back at it at the end of the week. I don't know. Do we need to end the pod with our Creighton-Nebraska? I think it's pretty obvious.
I feel like Nebraska would probably win by, I don't know, like 19.
I think Nebraska would win by 19 if they played.
Yeah, I think they probably would.
We seem pretty smart by making those predictions. I don't know.
What's funny is that we both predicted a 1 and a 2 point game.
I think we do deserve some credit for saying that it was going to be high scoring.
Yeah, we said it would be track meet.
Yeah. It's just
we weren't wrong.
Nebraska hit 14 threes.
Yeah.
Ooh.
That's a lot.
All right, Chris. We'll be back next week, I believe. And, thanks for listening.